Welcome to Season 3 of Swiss Impact with Banerjees. I'm Sveta.
And I'm Ben.
The topic of Season 3 is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people, or invest with impact?
Then our amazing and powerful guests, who are business owners, heads of financial institutions, thought leaders, political leaders, policymakers, investors, and experts.
Greetings, my name is Ash Bhattori, and I'm the senior mentor of the POP, or Protect Our Planet movement, and also a member of the board and secretary treasurer of the World Sustainable Development Forum. Our primary goal is to mobilize the 1.8 billion youth of the world to urgently address the issue of climate change and take action to protect our planet.
This will inspire you to get engaged.
And in this season, we will challenge them even more to take actions towards sustainable development goals, to enable paradigm shift in the financial sector and way of doing business.
Watch and learn how can we, as humans, transform into eco-financial system which would serve all people and the environment.
We aim for impact investment to become available to anyone, become truly mainstream.
See you every Friday at 3 p.m. Central European Time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Act for your future.
Good morning, afternoon and evening to everyone, and to our viewers from Far East, good night, and to all our Indian viewers, Happy Diwali.
Welcome back to week 9 of season 3. Our show is about impact investment. The theme of this season is impact investing, the new normal. And why impact investing is so important for our planet and people living on it? Because it is a driving force behind capital shift towards true impact, where positive social and environmental changes go along financial return.
Sveta, do you know that our intention is to spread awareness of impact investment and SDGs around the world? But we have had a very, very cool side effect.
Really? Well, I know that was our mission. Yes. Yeah, so what the side effect has been so far? So I hope positive.
Also. It is positive, because indeed the last 2 weeks I had coincidentally been invited to participate in investor meetings where potential investors met our guests who were on our TV and who are doing amazing projects.
Can you give a concrete example now?
Do you remember a couple of weeks back we had Kasike from Jamaica?
It's impossible to forget.
He was amazing. I think it was yesterday or day before yesterday, I was invited into a meeting where an investor met him, and the investor told him that if he can guarantee that his community will take care of the forests which they are in the custodian of, or they are holding custody of, and if they can show a report or picture every year of how the forest look like, he guarantees that he will fund it.
Wow, that's indeed great news. Thanks for sharing. In other words, businesses and funds participating in our program are reaching exactly the right audience.
Exactly. So businesses out there among our audience, if you are impactful and if you are really making a difference to the society or to the environment and seeking support, then please feel free to contact us. So before we start, I want to say, I even found out day before yesterday that people from Azerbaijan to Finland to Japan are watching us. So please,
I still don't believe that, but hi to everyone. Hi, thanks for watching.
It's really funny. But still, before we continue, a quick reminder to you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. And if you want to keep on watching also the other future exciting episodes, the channel is very easy. It's youtube.com/Swiss Impact.
Okay, that sounds amazing. And you can always also, if you're not yet ready, continue learning with us, check the courses on Chamomile about impact investing. Before we invite our guest, Ben, would you like to share a short story?
A very short one. So everybody knows now that COP26 is going on.
COP26, what is that? For those
who don't
know.
It's a climate change where the 26 biggest countries or economies are coming together, and they are in Glasgow. Few days back, they came out with a promise, and this promise was signed by 100 countries that they will stop for deforestation by 2030. And countries like Russia, Brazil, US, Canada, and Indonesia, who together control or manage around 85% of all the forest in the world. But before the signature, the ink of the signature was dry, the Indonesian environmental minister, Siti Nurbaya Bakar, came forward with a statement that it was wrong of other countries to ask Indonesia to stop deforestation.
I'm not even waiting to hear from what the Brazilian Bolsonaro will say.
That's exactly the problem. Firstly, the politicians will try in each and every way to wiggle out of commitments. And even when they do make a commitment, as we have seen in the past, it starts with a rhetoric, then it becomes a narrative, and then soon it disappears. So some of us might remember that in 2010, at the UN Climate Summit in Copenhagen, the rich nations had promised to pay $100 billion annually to the less wealthy nations to help them adapt to climate change and mitigate further rise in temperature.
It would be awesome, you know, as by now, after 10 years, the one who like numbers, they should have allocated $1 trillion into that. Well, but by now, we all know that it is a broken promise. Looking at the signatories of the present agreement of the deforestation promise, I think this promise is also doomed at birth. This is all what it is meant to be, just a media circus, don't you think so?
And that's why I believe that we are exactly in the right sector, the sector of impact investment. Whatever plans, promises, strategies, etc., our political leaders can come up with, which Greta Thunberg, who I really admire, very rightly named as blah, 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 not much will happen as long as our financial institutions with our money, so I mean the pension funds, saving funds, central banks, other banks, will keep investing massively into fossil fuel industry and politicians will keep on subsidizing and protecting them.
Well, thanks, Ben, for sharing this story. We will continue watching what's going to be the result of the COP 26. So let's welcome our guests of today from UK or even more from Belfast. Dr. Amer Fasihi, please join our studio and very well welcome here in Switzerland.
Good afternoon, Ben. Hi, Sveta. Good to see you again.
Good to see you too. That's amazing. Where are you right now?
Well, I'm in London and it's winter is definitely here. In the famous words of Game of Thrones, winter has come. it's getting colder. Your comments about COP26, absolutely spot on. It's so important. And here in the UK, we hear so much about it because we're hosting it. So let's hope they do carry through on the promises.
Yeah, we really hope something good will result out of it. But let me quickly introduce you to our audience, because not everyone yet knows you. So Amer is the CEO and co-founder at Cradle Company. He has worked in life science for over 20 years at
GlaxoSmithKline,
thank you, IQVIA, formerly IMS Health, and IBM. After which you, Amer, have founded Kairos Connect, and which after that merged with Cradle. You studied physics and biotechnology at Imperial College. You have PhD from Cranfield University in remote sensing. Wow, that's cool. And you are also a fellow at the Center for Digital Innovation at Cambridge University. And for those who are asking, what is Cradle actually? It was founded in 2016, and Cradle aims to address social isolation and support independence for the users. Your system is so unique that it combines social connectivity through easy TV video calling with remote monitoring through a broad IoT platform for health and environmental sensors and devices that together support the user independence and its well-being. So Cradle is headquartered in Belfast, which is also in London. So we want to know more about that.
So Amir, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and the activities of Cradle?
Sure, absolutely. And once again, thanks for inviting me onto the program. It's so important what you're doing in terms of the impact side of investing. And You know, the thoughts about where the world is going to go are absolutely what we all should be thinking about. And that's what's been coloring my own journey through this. So thanks for the introduction, Svetha. There's my professional journey through pharmaceuticals with Glaxo and then into knowledge services and analytics with IQVIA and IBM has all been about the applications of technology to health and to life sciences and just helping people's lives get a bit better. And it's really interesting to see how things are developing. And alongside that professional journey, for me, you know, and I'm sure this is the case with so many of your audience who are involved in health or in any of the areas that you guys talk about. You know, there's always a personal angle and a personal journey to why people start new things. And for me, it was looking after my father, who was suffering from congestive heart failure. All the time that I'm going through my professional career, you know, my parents are getting older and my father's suffering from that condition. And you think that there's got to be a way of improving the life, not just for him, you know, and the condition he's in, but also my mother, who's also aging and she has to look after him. And then, you know, my family is dispersed around the world and we're just constantly chasing my mother about the latest news on my father. So, you know, it's a poor thing. You know, we're just constantly ringing her up. What did the doctor say? And you know, it's tough for her. And so at the time that we're having those conversations, I'm also seeing the way in which technology can change the way that healthcare is delivered, make it more user-centered and you know, more relevant to the way in which families work. And that's why, you know, after seeing the kinds of technologies that were being developed at fantastic places like IBM, I thought that actually health is about to get user-centered. And that's why, with the personal experience of looking after my father for a bit, decided to start the Keros business and then met up with Paul Moorhead, co-founder, and Rupinder Singh, the co-founders at Cradle, and we decided to come together because, mm-hmm. you know, there's got to be a better way for people to age than the way that they're doing it at the moment.
We wanted actually to start with this very bold statement. How do we make aging better? Yeah. Can you explain it in more detail? Because I'm also, everyone is aging, you know, even if we want it or not, right? But you're also aging, in case you don't know. So how do we make aging better, Amit?
Well, you've got to remember that, you know, we as a civilization are extremely successful in extending in our goal, you know, which is to live longer. This is the whole point of everything that we do is to mitigate risk, to become healthier, to have better lives going forward, and to have long lives. And one of the concepts that's really coming through nowadays is it's not about lifespan per se, but it's about health span. You know, how long can a person stay healthy, productive, have a high quality of life, and really stave off? To a very narrow period in a person's life, that period where they become very ill. A lot of studies, a lot of research are all about, you know, can you get people to be more responsible and accountable for their own health, to take ownership over some of the things that can help them to live a bit longer? And so, you know, we've decided that actually our mission is to really address some of these underlying factors around which are driven a lot by not by individual behavior, but also by social setups and try and bring technology into play much more to try and address some of the issues that people commonly face when they get older. You know, and some of those things are really do make the headlines. The number of people who are going to be over 65 by 2050 is going to double from today, right? So today it's about 700 million people globally. In about 30 years' time, it's going to be 1.5 billion people are going to be over 65.
That's crazy. Shouldn't we go to the forest like Indian did before, you know? After a certain age, the elderly one just go to meditate in the forest. It's also one of the options, isn't it?
But we won't have any forests by then. That's the problem.
Well, if people keep to their promises for deforestation limitation, then we might have the forests. But yeah,
it's all connected.
It absolutely is. You know, it's not just where you're looking at the planet for younger generations. It's also people are living longer, right? And society needs to think about the way in which that's happening. Typically, you know, people getting older are facing social isolation. They face loneliness, and that really drives. It's amazing when you start looking at the research, how impactful loneliness and isolation can be, and how negative they are on people's health. Our goal really is to help people address issues that can affect the quality of life as they get older, of which loneliness mm-hmm. is one and isolation is one. And we think that by just better design and by treating older people as people who have aspirations, who have their own ambitions, they've still got life to live, you know, by treating them in that way, we can deliver a solution that they will adopt first, enrich their lives, make aging better, and then get everybody else along for the ride.
But I was thinking, because you know, I'm born in India and I was very young, and we could just run into our neighbor's house. We could get food wherever we wanted. And the best is go to the tea shop or something and just sit and chat with mm-hmm. everybody endlessly.
Yeah. We
didn't feel lonely. But now in the era of modern technology, when the whole world is basically in our fingertips, I mean, I can find any information, news, people feel more lonely than ever.
They do.
So I was thinking that it's the technology that has become the source and the cause of loneliness. So why do you think that you can use the same technology to battle loneliness?
Yeah, so it's a really good question, you know, and technology is so much in the news for the negative impacts that it has. You can just see what's been happening with some of the major tech companies and some of the issues that they are awash with. But I think that, you know, for the population that we're thinking about, for the kind of processes and lifestyles that we're thinking about, the kind of technology that we're putting together can really address the issues of isolation and loneliness that start coming up during aging. I mean, a lot of people end up with reduced mobility, right, as they get older and older for a number of reasons. But people go out less. Driving a car becomes more and more of an issue. There are and then as people get older, unfortunately, you know, some of their social network starts to disappear and diminish. And that causes isolation. And this technology that you're referring to, smart screen technology and tablets, these are not designed for older people. If you imagine, you're talking about fingertips, Ben, just now, you know, as people get older, circulation to their extremities starts to diminish a little. And what that means is that the fingertips become very dry and leathery, which means that they can't activate the screens as effectively. So when you see older people tapping the screen multiple times to try and make something happen, it's not because they don't know what they're doing. It's literally because that screen is not designed to work with their fingertips. You know, they're too dry. It's like tapping the screen with a pen. It doesn't activate the app. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, imagine, and I'm sure you've had the same experience where you're having a video call and you're holding the phone, right?
Yeah.
Oh, a lot. All the time, you know.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's fine. But now imagine you're holding the phone, but you've got arthritis in your shoulder, right?
Oh,
or your hand is trembling a little bit, right? Because you have to hold it. Or if you put the phone down and it's on a table and you have to lean over to walk. What if you've got hip problems or spine problems or any issue, you know? So all the common issues with aging are not taken into account with today's technology. And so we felt that actually technology, so the internet is extremely powerful. Connectivity is a very, very powerful concept, but really it's just the interface which needs to be addressed. And that's why we chose the TV, you know. Nobody has a smartphone room and nobody has a tablet room. Everybody who has a house has a TV room. And you have the most comfortable chair, You have the most comfortable sofa. It's all focused on that one screen. So we thought, well, actually, and this was just learnings from my father, from my co-founder's parents, that you start to see, well, actually, they're most comfortable sitting in front of the TV. Why aren't we using the TV instead of trying to teach, you know, trying to get them to use these smartphones and tablets, which just they don't like using. So we felt that actually you use the TV, design something that can enable access to the TV and enable people to make video calls from their phones to the TV. So, you know, I can call my mother, you just a standard video call from me and it'll come through to her TV. She has a remote control, which she just needs to hit the yes button and the call will start. You know, it's a very,
what
very
if she says
call.
No.
Listen, you don't know my mom. The chances are she probably will say no, right? No, I'm not having that.
Not now.
But you know, it's very important that one of the most important things that we build into the system is no training required. You know, there are so many governments, so many programs teaching older people IT skills. You know, a three-year-old can start using an iPhone immediately. They don't need IT training. Why do older people need IT training? They don't. It's to do with design, and that's. Mm-hmm. And that's really where we're going with this.
I have a feeling I have a feeling you're sitting on a chicken that lays golden eggs, because this is amazing, because you are hitting a market of 1.5 billion.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's right. The next question would be, what do you mean by remote health and how do you combine it with social contacts? Because that is one of the things you're doing. You have the social side, but you're also combining it with the remote.
That's right, Ben. The thing, you know, so video calling, everybody does, right? Smartphones, tablets, so nothing new there. Video calling through the TV, yeah, they're okay. That's kind of new, but a lot of people have also done that in the past, and so it's novel, but nobody really does it a lot. But use of the TV for video calling kind of makes us special, but what makes us unique is this independent, the support for independent living. And health monitoring that we're doing through the TV as well. So we've integrated, we've got a whole IoT, so Internet of Things, we've got a whole IoT platform integrated into this system as well. So our thinking is that if the older adult engages with the system, so they find the system really easy to use and they adopt it and they're calling their grandkids, they're seeing photos come from the family, they can see them on the TV, they'll use this and it will become part of their daily living. But what the family really wants and what healthcare providers or care providers want is peace of mind that that person is well. So we've integrated a whole range of sensors, movement sensors, room temperature sensors, but also medical devices like blood pressure monitors, weighing scales, thermometers that can really help a person monitor their health, take responsibility and accountability for their health, and have that data sent to a dashboard where other people can then see that they're doing well or whether they need to make any kind of intervention. So it's that combination of social, which is the video calling, and then the monitoring, which is done through the integrated devices.
Oh, okay. So now we wanted to get over to the next part of it. That's the cradle. Because I remember, you know, I'm in this sector in impact investment since quite a long time. It's more than two decades. And quite some few years back, someone approached us with a similar idea when he wanted to grant something similar, like giving medical institutions direct access to elderly patients at home. And also that the patients can themselves choose whether they want to share their data with the medical authorities or companies, with whom and under which conditions. And they were planning to use the blockchain technology for data privacy. But since the work you will be doing will be extremely data and privacy sensitive, and I assume you remember the cyber attack on NHS a few years back. So how will you mitigate or manage to mitigate this risk?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think in terms of security, data security, it's an ongoing project, right? Data and systems just becoming more and more sophisticated and more complicated. Means that we just need to stay abreast of how data is being transmitted. everything that we have is encrypted, both when it's produced. So if someone takes a blood pressure reading, the reading goes via Bluetooth into our system. It's encrypted there, and then it's transmitted through encryption and stored on a very secure cloud. And then again, you know, if it's drawn down, then you've got encryption and all the security around that. And so it's a constantly moving feast, right? You're always improving the security you have around the data. I guess the key part for us though is really keeping the data secure is absolutely essential. But you know, on the data point, it's absolutely critical that we operate in an ethical way, right? I mean, tech companies, some of the tech giants that are operating at the moment, you know, with global platforms, and just the way in which data is just taken. And people don't have a choice. You know, you're asked a question.
This is exactly what I wanted to ask you, Amar, you know, because nowadays everyone is monetizing, selling off information or data with or without their users' knowledge. Right. So how are you going to protect your users from such dilemma? And how did you inbuild any ethical principles in this system?
It is, you know, it's such an important element of any kind of technology that starts to get out there. Any of these global platforms, you know, it's very difficult to live without them and not to use them. But every time that there's a data scandal, they always say, "But you agreed to have your data." You know, but I had no choice. Right.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't agree, then you can't use it, right?
Or you have 20 pages which you have to read and say, "I agree." Nobody reads it. You just do, "I agree."
That's right. And you know, that's another major reason why a lot of older adults don't engage with these kind of tech platforms, because they hear so many negative things about what's happening with the data, and it's a very, very difficult area. But you know, Cradle is a company that's just starting. We've launched our product a year ago. We're doing quite well, but we're still at an early stage of our life cycle. So I think we have a great opportunity to set out our store with regards to ethics and principles when it comes to the data. I believe that this data should be owned and by the person who's generating it, right? So the owner, the person who, from where that data is coming, they're the ones who have the control over what happens with their data. And that's what we will build in. And if that data is going to be shared, then there has to be some value that comes back to the user as a result of that data. Mm-hmm. And the consent is an absolutely essential part of this. So for us, I believe that as people get older, there are two key questions that need to be answered. How normal am I? What's going to happen next? Right? I mean, those essentially, that's what you want to know about your health, right? Are other people feeling like I do? And what should I be worried about? Where are the next gotchas going to come? And especially when it comes to concepts like health span. So our goal is to provide our users with those insights, right? So can we do some analytics which compare them to people that are similar to them? Can we do analytics and put some kind of predictive models together that help people understand what kind of risks they should be aware of? Now, we can only do those if people share their data and if give us the permission and consent to anonymize and aggregate their data into a large data set, compare them, and answer these two questions for each individual. And that's the value they get back, right? That's the quid pro quo, that people get those insights for sharing their data. And what do we get? Well, we get the opportunity to build this massive data set, which has a really rich insight that can provide a lot of value and a lot of support for society in general. So, you know, ethics is built into this. It's a transactional element. It's not just something we're going to rip out. We're going to show the rest of the tech companies that this is how it should be done.
I mean, what you are saying is quite amazing, because it is basically data flow on both directions. In one direction, the user agrees that, yes, you can share my data. On the other side, you're aggregating the information and giving him back feedback, which may be useful for him.
Yes.
So, but But then comes the question, I can very seriously consider that insurance companies or pharmaceutical companies might also be very, very interested in your data, even more, maybe in your aggregated data, to be able to develop themselves a better product. And maybe they may even be prepared to pay your user, or the company, for it. Have you also thought about that?
Yeah, it's absolutely. You know, I used to work at IBM, and I think that the IBM chairperson or the CEO at the time came out with the phrase, data is the new oil, right?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Right? The difference being that this new oil doesn't cause climate change. It's absolutely true that the data is going to be very, very valuable. But we can only get this data if we do it, and it can only have quality to it when it's ethically positioned and developed. So we will certainly be making very transparent moves towards what we believe will be value generators for the company. We think that there is a whole play into analytics. We think that using this data with all those different sectors that you talked about is absolutely something that we're going to be exploring. But we're going to do it in a way that that safeguards our user base first and foremost. That is the absolute essential part of this. And there's real value to be had, you know. If a pharma company starts looking at this data and starts to realize that there's something that they could do with their medicines, either side effects or more indications that they can bring out, well, that's good. Or if insurance premiums can be reduced by some kind of insight that the data gives, again, that's good. But it's got to be done ethically.
Mm-hmm. Amer, when we also spoke to you last time, you mentioned that your business case is unique, even though I would say it's really simple. And we usually say all genius is simple, right? So you have the first mover's advantage. Can you explain on that? And how quick do you expect some competitors to catch on that idea?
Well, as we were just talking about, you know, the use of the TV for video calling isn't new. And there have been a number of companies that have tried to do this, and you can still do it. I mean, you can, you know, link up your PC to your computer, put a webcam on your TV, and then do the call and you do the same on the other side.
My son is using the TV for his games, and then they speak with other games.
That's right. So, you know, it's Sweta's question is a really good one. That, you know, how do people catch up? Well, we think our first mover advantage is based on the fact that we are focused on older adults. Our system is designed for adoption and engagement of older adults. We're not looking to make a product which is just for general consumer consumers. You've already got those products. You know, we call them smartphones and tablets, and apps on those devices. Older adults need the kind of thing that we are putting together. We've designed this with focus groups, with workshops. We've got a lot of learnings now from our time in the market. And we think that that's really what sets us apart, by bringing the social and the health and well-being side all together and trying to engage people. That's really where we're going to see the lead that we've got from our first mover advantage continue to grow. And we hope to enrich it. You know, we want to build local platforms with community activities, educational content. All this kind of thing is where we think we'll go, but we'll be focusing upon this one segment that we don't think many of the tech companies are really focusing on.
Okay. But you also mentioned that you offer independent support. What do you mean by that?
So that's support for independent living. Right. So we know that one of the most important aspects of healthy aging is maintaining independence and control over your life. The monitoring platform that we have, the IoT platform that's part of it, it helps people to stay independent for as long as possible, to stay living in their own home for as long as possible. One of the key concepts that we as a company are chasing is the concept of resilience, right? And building up resilience in older adults and in people as they age is one of the most critical factors around ensuring that aging is a healthy process. And independent living, maintaining control of your life, being able to follow your interests, these are the key things, the key components, more important even, which was totally surprising to me from the research, more important even than physical physical health is this thing around independence, control, optimism, right? These are the things that that keep people resilient and going for as long as possible.
Can you explain this term?
There is a nice movie, you know, there is a nice, I forgot the name, about elderly man who refuses to go to elderly house. And
Robot
he is
and
on
Frank.
His own. Sorry, say it again?
Robot and Frank.
Maybe, yeah,
it,
yeah, yeah.
And have a robot in there. And
and then he leaves the elderly house and whatever happens to him, yeah, that's... Yeah, yeah.
But you used just now a lot of very technical words. Can you explain the words you just explained, or you just mentioned?
so Ben, which ones didn't you get?
The last sentence, the resilience, and then you added three.
So for us, resilience is a really, really important concept. And that's really what makes us user-centered. There are so many studies since the last 10, 15 years, which have really focused upon three aspects of aging, which drive quality, right? So one is having a good social life, right? A dynamic social mix. So you have contact with lots of different people, ideally multi-generational, but lots of social contact, right? Regular social contact. The second thing is having an outside interest. So some kind of hobby, right? Something that keeps you interested. It might be poetry. It might be learning a new language. It might be learning programming, right? But something which, or woodworking, it's something that keeps you engaged and interested. And the third thing is optimism, right? Are you looking at life in a positive way? And those three things are really, those three factors are the three factors that determine the quality of a person's life as they get older. Notice how physical robustness is not one of them, right? It's about these three areas. And we as a company are focused upon these three areas, right? We want to deliver people, we want to help people become more resilient as they age. We want them to have, this point about educational content that we want to make available on our platform. You know, digital exclusion is a massive problem in older adults because of the design issues that the smart screens have. And there's so much digital content that's available. So many universities make courses available. There are so many discussion groups and community events that take place that people can participate in only if they get on their computer or they get on their smartphone. We want to make that kind of content available through the TV. What better place, right? If you can't get out, you can't move around, what better place is there than your sofa to sit and participate, right? In a study group or to be part of a book club, all right? Or to learn a new language. The sofa is the most comfortable place, right? So sit in front of your TV and participate. So that's how we hit that outside interest. You remember that's one of the three areas, right?
Right.
Outside interest, we hope to deliver with educational content. The social connectivity, that's what we try and deliver through the TV video conferencing, right? So you can have one-to-one calls. So those, we call those sofa-to-sofa calls, by the way, right? Because because you're almost always, if you're calling through the TV, you're sitting on a sofa. So that's sofa-to-sofa, right?
I'm almost convinced to try it out when I will be.
Absolutely. But nothing, it's the most relaxing way to have a video call. You have your cup of tea. You don't have to hold.
But would I then need to have a hardware, and you will need to have a hardware, and everybody I talk to have to have a hardware?
Well, if you're doing sofa to sofa calling, so if you're calling from TV to TV, yes, you will need a Connect hub. We call our system Connect. You'll need a Connect hub on your TV, and the person you're calling would need a Connect hub. But you can call, I can call you from my phone, right? I can have a I have the Connect app on my phone, and typically this is what we believe will happen, that most families will have, you know, like my mother, you know, she's at the center of our circle. My siblings, we have the app on our phone, and we just call her TV using our phones. We can hold the phone, we can talk, and she's sitting on her TV telling everyone off. So you know, it's a really easy way to do it. And then you can have multiple people on the calls as well, right? So you can have, you know, you can have group calls, and then for organized. So you know, my sister and I want to talk to mum, then we're all together. And we can talk on the phone, we can share photos and all this kind of thing, and she can see that all on her TV. And then you can have things, again, talking to the resilience piece, which is around community events. You know, so if there's in the UK, we have a charity called Age UK. They do local events in all around the country, different types of events, and people typically go and join them. But if you can't move out of the house, if you can't drive, if you can't get there, you can't participate. But with our system, we can broadcast from those community events to everyone's home that has one of the Connect systems. So then they can also participate in those events from their sofas, the most comfortable place to participate.
And what about the speaker? Does your mom also need a headset? A headset or something?
No. That our system has four very sensitive microphones that's built in. So it really, you know, from about a distance of 9 or 10 meters away, you just need to speak in a conversational way and it will pick up the conversation.
Okay.
So
she,
literally, you know, and sofas are normally, 2 to 4 meters away from the TV screen, right? So you very comfortably have a chat, and the Connect system uses the speakers of the TV. So it's not only a bright screen that she's looking at, it's also the loudest, right? You don't need earphones. You don't need it. She can control the volume using her TV remote control.
Mm-hmm. So basically, then your mom only needs the Connect system and an internet.
That's it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's
sounds
it.
Great. That sounds really great. Guys, let's change to the status of wherever you stand. We'd love to know more about your offer and status. And before we dive into that, I have another question for you. Because, you know, the older one gets, the chances are high that someone will require more medical support, right?
Yeah.
And what are the exact actions or demands of the elderly which you will be able to fulfill with your systems?
No, it's a good question. And, you know, also in terms of the status of the business, we've been working closely with the National Health Service here in the UK. We've got about, since we launched about a year ago, we've got about 15 contracts. A lot of what's happening there is exactly around the health status, where because of COVID, people were being discouraged from having to go to hospitals or clinics. And what people have been able to do with our system is use the IoT platform. So they've been getting, you know, oximeters that you can put those on the end of your finger, and it measures the blood oxygen and very during COVID. So people have been able to send their data from those oximeters direct to nurses and doctors. And the doctors and nurses have made the decision about whether they need to then interact. And if they do, they just call in through the TV. And so remote health monitoring, we're the only TV-based system that enables remote health monitoring, that we've been doing that. And it's all driven off the IoT platform. And we've got fantastic feedback from doctors and nurses, just talking about how engaging the system is and how easily patients are able to adopt the system.
Mm-hmm. But you just now mentioned that if your mother just needs your internet and Connect.
Yeah.
But if she buys it, how complicated is it to install it?
Well,
does she have to install it herself, or will you send somebody to do that?
Well, we find the installation to be incredibly easy. That does not mean that my mother finds it to be incredibly easy. And our learning is that my mother is not atypical. You know, there's most older adults don't find adapting or installing this kind of system, any kind of system, right? Like it could just be home Wi-Fi. It's not a straightforward system, even though you have clear instructions. Our system is very, very easy to install. For someone who can install a Kindle Fire Stick, let's say, or Apple TV, it's a 2-minute job, right? But it literally is. I mean, you're plugging in a PowerPoint and you're putting our system on the TV and you're connecting an HDMI cable to the TV. That's it. There are two. That's it. It's like a phone charger goes into the wall. It is actually a phone charger, right? Plug it to the wall. You plug it to the back of our system. And then there's one HDMI cable that goes from the back of the Kinect system into the HDMI port of the TV. It's that easy.
Any TV.
It does not have to be a smart TV. Any TV.
Wow. Uh-huh. Right?
Well, I could do that. I could install it.
I'm sure you could. But what we've learned in our last year of working with lots and lots of older adults is that sometimes, for a lot of people, it's just, oh my God, this is technology. I can't do this. Right. And so we can either send installers, but most often what happens is that because we're a B2B, we're working with other businesses. Most often what happens is we train somebody in those partner businesses and that person can then do the installations for what's happening. And that works really, really successfully. But it's absolutely a simple system for people to put together and use. And as you say, Ben, it works with any TV. The TV themselves do not have to be internet enabled. Our system picks up the internet either through the home Wi-Fi or through 4G connectivity.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Amir, you mentioned a lot now the social angle of the system, right? That why someone would use it beside Facebook or WhatsApp.
Yeah.
But I know that Cradle, it's also has very important medical angle with which the user can communicate with the doctor, nurse, and pass them information on their heart rates, blood pressure, etc., right? But so could you elaborate a bit more? How is it used in practice? So then the elderly person should not go to doctors. They just also can do it from home, deliver this data to the doctor.
Yeah, so as I was just saying, we work closely with the NHS and care homes and social care organisations here in the UK. And typically what happens is that the NHS has been providing this system to...
For those who don't know, NHS is the National Health Services of United Kingdom.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
Because that's the problem with international audience.
But being in Britain, you believe that everyone, if there's one thing that the UK has exported successfully and very proud of, is the NHS. So yes, it's the National Health Service. Thank you so much. So the National Health Service, the NHS, has been providing the system to the users. As I was giving you the example about the oximeter, it's been deployed with blood pressure monitors, with weighing scales, oximeters, and it's really been helping people to stay in touch with nurses and doctors. The doctors and nurses know that they're getting data directly from the device. So the user doesn't have to type in anything. This is all through Bluetooth transmission, right, and our IoT platform. So they know that the data is correct. And then they just need to act on the back of that. So if the readings are appropriate for that person, then the nurse and doctor don't need to make a call. But if they feel that they need to have a chat, they call through the Kinect system. So they have the TV consultation. And the big difference is that the camera for Kinect is on top of the TV and it has a field of view across the TV room. Mm-hmm. So the feedback we get from healthcare professionals is that they don't just get to see the user's face, which is typically what happens on a smartphone, right? You just see this, or you see this bit, or it's looking up there. That's the problem with using the smartphones.
I have that talking with my uncle in India.
Yeah,
he puts on the video and holds the
ear. Yeah, you're looking at the inside of his ear. Right.
And yeah, exactly.
You have your uncle, but maybe suboptimal if you don't, want to see the inside of his ear. So, but with our system, you're sitting on the sofa, you're 2 to 4 meters away from the camera. The person calling in gets to see the whole room. They get to see your body language. They get to see how you move. And this is very important for healthcare professionals. You know, when they say that they need to eyeball a patient, is that they really need to see the patient, how they move, how they walk, what they do. Mm-hmm. And you can do that with our system. It has a, the Kinect system has a 12 megapixel camera, right? I mean, that's a higher resolution than most phones. So it really picks up the details. And we're being used for also for loneliness and isolation issues, obviously what we're designed for, but mental health. It's very important to see surroundings and see tidiness and all this kind of thing in a person's room, which is what the professionals tell us. So these are the uses that are, these are some of the healthcare uses that that it's getting with over here.
We have to put our room in, room in order before we use that.
Yeah, but you know, that's a very important point. One of the key things for us is, unlike systems that Facebook have put out, where anybody on your WhatsApp directory can call you, for us, you only have a small circle of people who can call. They have to be registered as supporters, because you don't let anybody into your TV room, right? Your TV room is your family sanctuary. And so it's not right that everybody can just call you and see what's happening. So you can only have a small group of supporters who can call you. That can include a doctor or a nurse or whatever. But if you're not part of the circle, you cannot make that call. So we safeguard and the vulnerable people.
That's a very important point.
And,
yes.
And you also mentioned that the user also will have the possibility to chart where he stands and his present situation, and then make plans and chart a journey based on his own data, and maybe also use statistics from your similar patients in your database.
Correct.
To be able to do so, you will have to save somewhere all the data of the user and also other users. So have you also thought about the security angle of that?
Yeah, so we're using the Amazon Cloud at the moment, and it's extremely secure. It's industry leading. And so we've got a high level of confidence that there's scalability, so we can get everybody's data stored in the same place, but there's extremely high security, and that's what that's all part of the business, is to make sure that that data is safeguarded.
Okay. And then I would just add to it is that, are you, because you have all this data, would you also be creating predictive modeling using statistics, or run through artificial intelligence, or use other similar data sources?
Yes, that's absolutely the plan, Ben. So as we're now building out the business and we're starting to grow and we're moving into that growth stage of our life cycle, the plan is absolutely to do everything you just said, which is to use machine learning to start comparing people. Again, consent is at the core of this. But for that consent, people do get the value of being able to understand how they compare, how normal am I, and what's going to happen next. So, and that's the analytics that we'll be developing.
What do you mean by how normal am I?
How normal? Everybody.
We are not normal, I think. Even the impactness is a new normality topic, but we are.
Svetlana, how normal is Ben?
please don't ask that question.
Let's talk about that behind the scenes.
But it's a very important question for most people, right? How do I compare with other people like me? So, you know, if there's a 75-year-old, they've got diabetes, they might have some cardiovascular. Are they walking below average for somebody who has their kind of health status? Are they walking more? Should they be walking more? These are some of the questions that we can only answer by comparing people's data. And that's what we'll try and win with the consent.
Mm-hmm. Amer, but where do you stand right now with Credo? Are you operational? You have a lot of clients, B2B, or maybe partners? Like, what are your needs? A little bit more on that point.
Yeah, so we're at a really interesting stage of our life cycle now. We as I say, we're operational. We launched, we started in about 2017, 2016-ish. So it's been about 3 years of development. We launched in 2020. And as I say, we've got about 15 contracts. A number of those are with the National Health Service, and we got one or two international contracts. we're about...
In terms of number of systems, like how many systems you could already sell or make contracts?
Yeah, we've got about 400 to 500 out there already. And we're very proud of a licensing deal that we've signed with a company called CommScope, who are the global leader in set-top box manufacture. They lead the US market, they lead the global market. They're very interested in distributing, they're producing the Kinect unit, the hardware, and they're licensing our software for distribution globally. So we're right on the cusp now of really growing very fast with CommScope as a partner driving that. We are looking at launching in the US in January with CommScope at the Consumer Electronics Show. So we're really, you know, that's going to be outstanding to see the product launched there in the digital health area. So we expect to grow fast, and because we're at that growth stage, we're also in the hopefully around the end of a Series A fundraise. So so we're hoping to close soon. The raise is still on, so I don't know if your listeners are interested. They can reach out, I'm sure.
Well, everyone, to all the investors, there is an opportunity window which is closing. So,
but can you mention some numbers? What are you looking for?
So we're looking to raise about £6.5 million sterling, and
that's like eight million euros.
Around 8 million euros, about 10 million US, and that should get us to profitability in early 2024. We're very pleased with the kind of royalty projections that we've got from CommScope in terms of the US sales, where they'll be distributing, and that'll start happening soon. And we have a unique distribution agreement, which is in discussion at the moment with an entity here in the UK for NHS distribution. So it's, you know, it's a great, we're just on the cusp of greatness, as my co-founders keep saying. You know, we're on the launch pad, and this funding round will really drive global distribution. We're looking to set up partnerships, so it's not just the funding that we're after. And I'm hoping that if there are people listening to this, that they can reach out, and if they've got good contacts within countries or good distribution networks that they'd be interested in exploring with us, please reach out. We're looking to build up that global network.
That's very positive. And have you also thought about big countries like India or something?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, even though these countries are traditionally seen as being quite young on the demographic side, 10% of a billion is more than there is in Europe. So yeah, we're up for it. But you know, first mover advantage is all about moving fast. So we want to move fast. Right. We want to set up distribution agreements, and we want to work on the data and provide a fantastic experience for people. You know,
and you're fully scalable.
Oh, fully scalable, absolutely. With CommScope behind us, we can pump out as many units as is required. Okay. You know, we as a society have been incredibly successful in extending people's lives to the level that we have. We should be very proud of that. And our job now is to make those lives as enriched and fulfilling for as long as possible.
Well, that was impactful journey today. Amer, the time is running. I just have one last question, or as a tradition, could you share a call to action for our global elderly audience and the younger one who should take some responsibility for the elderly ones?
Please join us in addressing the social isolation and loneliness that is driving so many people to just look for a better way of aging and improving quality of life globally. Join us on the Cradle Journey.
Thank you, Amer. Thank you for joining us today. And as a little gift, you will get a honorary membership of Chamomile platform. Just register and we will upgrade that.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Amer.
Well, dear viewers, with this, our show of today, the 9th episode of season 3 ends. And if you like it, please don't forget to subscribe at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/SwissImpact.
And next week, we will be traveling to my home country again. To the Netherlands, where we will find an amazing project, which is replacing not only combustion engine cars, but even better, they are talking of replacing cars all by itself. Their motto is how to accelerate the energy transition in mobility 10 times.
I can't wait to welcome the next guest next week. As for now, thanks for watching us. Act for your future.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Welcome to season 3 of Swiss Impact with Banerjees. I'm Sveta.
And I'm Ben.
The topic of season 3 is impact investing, the new normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people or invest with impact?
Then our amazing and powerful guests who are business owners, heads of financial institutions, thought leaders, political leaders, policymakers, investors, and experts.
Greetings, my name is Ash Bachori, and I'm the senior mentor of the POP or Protect Our Planet movement, and also a member of the board and secretary treasurer of the World Sustainable Development Forum. Our primary goal is to mobilize the 1.8 billion youth of the world to urgently address the issue of climate change and take action to protect our planet.
This will inspire you to get engaged.
And in this season, we will challenge them even more to take actions towards sustainable development goals, to enable paradigm shift in the financial sector and way of doing business.
Watch and learn how can we, as humans, transform into eco-financial system which would serve all people and the environment.
We aim for impact investment to become available to anyone, become truly mainstream.
See you every Friday at 3 p.m. Central European Time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Act for your future.